9 years after the UK voted to leave the European Union, the two sides have struck a new deal. It comes as the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, hosts a summit with the head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. The agreement ranges across several areas, including security and food standards. But already a storm has erupted over fishing rights, with groups representing fishermen saying a 12-year deal, which gives EU boats continued access to British waters, is hugely damaging to their interests. For an overview, we can talk to Peter Foster, who's World Trade Editor with the Financial Times. Peter, thanks for talking to us this lunchtime. What are the main components of this deal?
Good afternoon. I think there's two components, really. There's the security and defence partnership, and then there's the trade piece. The security and defence partnership is similar to the kind of deal that the EU has with lots of other countries, South Korea, North Macedonia, Japan. And I think the significance of that is that it puts the UK back in the room. We didn't have one of these partnerships after Brexit because of the, you know, frankly, the damage that was done to the relationship with the previous government. So this restores that, twice yearly meetings between the UK foreign minister and the EU's high representative, exchanges of personnel, dialogues on space and cybersecurity and the shadow fleets. And I think the importance of that, talking to experts, is really getting the UK back in the room. So that's the defence and security bit, and they'll build on that. And there may also be an opportunity, in fact, there will be an opportunity for UK defence companies to take part in the £150 billion loan facility that the EU is running to try and boost European rearmament. So that's defence and security. The second bit is more limited. It's about trade, and there are two big components of that. The first one is a veterinary agreement to try and remove all that red tape that we saw on exports going across the border, and also an agreement to link our energy markets again. And that's important because collectively we intend to generate a lot of green electricity in the North Sea. And as a result of Brexit, our emissions trading schemes and our energy markets were severed and separated. And that's caused real friction for the trade of electricity. And both sides need that to be done. And that will have also an ancillary benefit, which is removing or exempting the UK from this carbon border tax that the EU is bringing in on the 1st of January next year. And that could save British businesses £800 million. To be clear, though, those two things are still pretty small beer. So our Office for Budget Responsibility estimates that Brexit will have a 4% hit to UK GDP in the long run. And by most economists' calculations, this will make about upside between now and 2040. So it's only chipping away at the damage that Brexit caused economically.
Mm-hmm. In a number of areas, then, is it fair to say that there's more work to be done?
Yeah, so in all of this, we still have to do the deal. So if, when you read the text of these agreements, it says, you know, we commit to explore, we're minded to do this, that and the other. I think you alluded to the row on fish in your introduction. So mm-hmm. Now that that's done, the 12-year deal on fish, which is essentially a status quo deal. And the flip side of that is then if you're a Scottish salmon farmer or a Welsh mussel farmer, you can now have much easier access to the EU market. Remember, the UK is a net importer of fish and the UK fishing fleet is quite small. So it makes a big political noise, but ultimately it's a tiny fraction, 0.02% of our GDP. So, you know, that will be, you know, one of the kind of big balancing benefits, I think.
Looking, though, at some of the papers over the past couple of days, and I know that you're a Brexit veteran and you have the wounds to prove it. I mean, looking at those papers, you'd be forgiven for thinking that this is 2016. There's still lots of talk about sellouts and surrender.
It is interesting, you know, my view about this whole deal is it's not a mega deal. It's good. It's a step in the right direction for normalising relations. You know, the Labour red line, no single market, no customs union. This is not unravelling the Brexit deal. In fact, in substance, the Brexit deal that David Frost and Boris Johnson did is alive and well. But what you've got is, you know, just an example of just how the two silos in this Brexit debate are still there. So regardless of how limited this deal is, the right pro-Brexit media are going to scream surrender and betrayal. And at the same time, Keir Starmer, frankly, is over-egging how important it is from a trade and economy point of view. So what you've got is a lot of noise on both sides of the debate, when in reality, this isn't something that anyone should get too worked up on the downside or the upside.
What do opinion polls say about the public attitude towards Brexit now? I mean, if there was another vote in the morning, what would happen?
Do you know what? That is a good question, because sometimes the opinion polls don't tell you the whole picture. There has been what they call generational replacement. So more old people voted for Brexit than didn't. And they've died off over the years. And so in that sense, you do see a move towards voting to rejoin, as it were. But you have to be careful with those numbers, because some of the people who say they're dissatisfied with Brexit, it's not that they think it was too damaging and they want to go back in the EU. They actually want a harder Brexit. And the second thing is, you can see with that hullabaloo that you were talking about, betrayal, et cetera, that if we got back into a real debate about rejoining, do you want to have free movement again? Do you want to pay back into the EU budget again? Do you want to be a rule taker from Brussels again? It is not at all clear that, you know, the UK is ready to make a really clear-cut decision. If you were to rerun the referendum, and by the way, there's no chance of that happening, I don't think you would get the kind of result that would be of any interest to the EU, which has to be a really committed result. And you see Nigel Farage's Reform Party riding high in the polls at the moment. If you're in the European Union, it's also not at all clear that if Keir Starmer lost the election, in 2029, that a lot of this wouldn't be unravelled anyway. And so I don't think there's any momentum towards rejoining. And it's why Keir Starmer stuck to these no single market, no customs union red lines.
Peter Foster of the Financial Times, thank you very much for talking to us.